1240WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome back for another show today. Josh Planos, Washington Post contributor, will be my guest. Josh, a busy young man this past week with several articles, a couple of those on the Arizona Cardinals, one concerning Larry Fitzgerald, which turned out to be quite the timely article. And it's getting you set for the NFL Conference Championships coming up, which, by the way, you can hear this Sunday on 1340 WNBS. But we're going to talk with Josh also about college basketball. Josh is, he's kind of in Big Ten country, covers Nebraska, but also that's sort of Big 12 country with Oklahoma in that area as well. He kind of has a handle on that. And last night, our old buddy Steve Prohm, the former coach at Murray State, leading Iowa State to the nice win over Oklahoma, beating a number one team. But the first time, I think it was 17 years before Steve was born, the last time Iowa State has beaten the number one team. So it goes to show you that it's not something that's happened very often in Ames, Iowa, but something they were able to do last night. And congratulations to Steve and Iowa State on getting that done. Still, as I taped this morning, we've had no official word on the Breon Sanchez MRI reading. The test was conducted yesterday, and then today they were scheduled to read the image. I'm not sure the time, but I do know the recording of this, which is a little before noon, we don't know anything at the moment, but we should be getting the word at some point today. Check my Twitter account. As soon as they know, we shall pass that along to you. So we're going to have Josh for you in just a minute. Let's get you caught up with just a few things that went on last night. Of course, Murray High's girls now up to sixth in the state in the latest AP rankings, and they played like it last night. They're in the All-A Classic, which is, in essence, it's a non-KHSAA sanction, which means they don't run the tournament. It's okay, they play it. They just play it like a regular season tournament, but it's for schools 400 and under. And Murray High, with a convincing win last night, they're the heavy favorite to win the regional title and probably the co-favorite, if not the favorite, to win the state championship. But they overwhelmed Hickman County 74-16 last night in the opener at Mayfield. Maddie Waldrop 14, Macy Turley, Alexis Purpo 13 each. Murray will play on Thursday against tonight's Ballard Memorial Fulton County winner. And again, you've heard the weather forecast. There could be weather issues that change what this tournament is supposed to do, so we'll keep you posted on that. Carlisle County, a 73-46 winner over St. Mary in the other girls' game. Second region All-A Classic, Crittenden, a 47-30 winner over UHA. Livingston Central defeated Dawson Springs 70-47. On the boys' side, Preston English scored 16 points. Jamonte McClure added 14. Murray crushes Fulton City 70-19. In the first game for the Tigers in the Region 1 All-A Classic in Mayfield. Murray was up 34 at halftime, never really challenged. They're now 14-4 on the season. They advance to Friday's 6 p.m. semifinal game against tonight's, or Wednesday night's, Ballard Memorial and St. Mary winner. Tonight, the Galloway County Lady Lakers return to action. They visit Graves County. One other note tonight, Graves County's boys game at Hopkinsville will be played, but they've blown out the JV game. They'll play the varsity game at 6. That'll allow enough time for the team to get back. The nasty stuff supposed to be hitting midnight or later, but just to be on the safe side, that's probably a good idea to make that move. Doesn't quite take the sting out of the loss for Kentucky fans, but the SEC is fining Auburn $100,000 for storming the court for beating Kentucky on Saturday. In a statement, SEC officials said they understood the enthusiasm, but that the fans storming the court presented a safety hazard. It's the second time Auburn's been fined for court storming since that rule went into effect in 2004. Kentucky is off until Thursday when they visit Arkansas. The Cats drop from 14th to 17th in the latest Associated Press poll. Louisville has now passed them from 21st to 17th. One game in OVC play tonight, SEMO. The winds have been coming very infrequently for the Red Hawks, but they should get one tonight. They host Hannibal LaGrange at the Show Me Center. In the SEC tonight, Mississippi State at Florida, South Carolina at Ole Miss, Alabama at Auburn, LSU at Texas A&M. Former Racer head coach Billy Kennedy trying to get a win over Ben Simmons, and we'll have the game for you on WNBS, part of our Compass Radio Network contract. 7:45 is our airtime for the game on WNBS. Former Morehead State standout Kenneth Faried, along with former Kentucky stars Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and John Wall, were among the 30 players selected Monday as finalists for the U.S. basketball team that will attempt to win a third straight gold medal in Rio de Janeiro. The final 12-player roster will be chosen sometime this summer. Kentucky's wide receiver coach is leaving the team. Chad Scott will reportedly leave Mark Stoops' staff to head to North Carolina, expecting to take a position as the tight ends coach for the Tar Heels. He's moved that way before. He was a running back with the Wildcats 2000 to 2001 and transferred to North Carolina. The 8-member ballot is out for the Cardinals Hall of Fame. Two will be selected for the class of 2016 by fan vote. The candidates, Chris Carpenter, Keith Hernandez, Jason Isringhausen, Mark McGuire, Matt Morris, Edgar Renteria, Scott Rowland, and Joe Torre. And the Tennessee Titans have a new general manager and a new head coach. During yesterday's official announcement, the team introduced former interim coach Mike Mularkey as the head coach, and Union City native John Robinson brings years of scouting experience from the Patriots and Buccaneers as the Titans' new general manager. All right, that's going to wrap that portion up. Stay tuned. Josh Planos will be my guest right after this. Make plans now to attend the Racer Athletics Hall of Fame Banquet and Induction Ceremony, sponsored by the Murray Bank. The class of 2016 includes Wes Cunningham, Coach Ron Green, Ashley Hayes, Kim Kohler, and Terry Love. Hall of Distinction inductees will include Claire Benton, Dr. Richard Blaylock, Phil Bryan, and Chuck Shuffin. The banquet and ceremony will be held at 6 p.m. on February 5th. Limited seats are available, so make your reservations by January 26th by calling 270-809-3746. For more information, visit GoRacers.com. Welcome back to the show. As promised, Josh Planos joins me, and a lot to talk about. We'll start in the world of college basketball, where last night it seems like getting voted number one, Josh, in college basketball means that you're set up for defeat. No exception last night, just hours after being named unanimous number one in the coaches' poll, Oklahoma goes down to Iowa State. And there's a lot of folks. I know the Big Ten is really solid this year, but the Big 12, they can certainly throw their name in the hat, is perhaps the best team in America, or the best league in America, rather.
Oh, certainly. And I think last night's matchups definitely lived up to the bill. You know, we saw, like, in Oklahoma's other loss to Kansas, you know, Buddy had a monster game again. He dropped 27 last night. And it does seem to be that, you know, when we get two ranked Big 12 opponents together, you know, we should have, like, a push alert on our phone to get everyone to the TV set, because they always seem to end up, you know, down to the wire. A lot of cardiac games, and, you know, I guess that's why they call Iowa State the cardiac clones, because, you know, they're always playing it close to the chest. And last night was just, you know, a lot of fun. It was probably the most fun I've had watching the basketball games than the Oklahoma-Kansas game. And yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, there are two teams in the top three, you know, who hail from the Big 12 and the super deep conference. And, you know, everyone's kind of played to at least what was expected of them, or you know, even surpassed what was expected of them this season. And, you know, they have the teams ranked in the top 25 to prove it.
I know you cover the Big Ten out there as well, and that I have no idea what to make of that. It looked like Michigan State. I watched a couple games early in the season. I thought they're hands down going to be the best team in that league. And then you look at the standings, and you got Indiana and Iowa at the top. No doubt that Maryland was going to be there right with Michigan State, two potential Final Four teams, and then Purdue. It's there's a lot of really fantastic teams there, and the Big Ten can make a case for being the best league too, especially with what they've been doing.
Oh, sure. I mean, you just saw Wisconsin, you know, knock off Michigan State this weekend, and Wisconsin's, you know, one of the bottom four teams in the conference in terms of, you know, conference record. It's an incredibly deep conference as well. I mean, it really seems to be a, you know, a Big Ten, Big 12, ACC battle for you know, supremacy in the college basketball world. You know, and there's five ranked teams in the Big Ten. Like you mentioned, you know, no one really expected Iowa to be this, you know, this juggernaut, but now they're up to, I think, the highest ranking since, you know, 2002, you know, at number nine. And obviously everyone expected Maryland to be, you know, a big part of this season in terms of, you know, being competitive on a national scale. And, you know, Indiana seems to be thriving. So, you know, there's a lot of good basketball going on right now. I think a lot more parity than people expected. You know, there's usually around this time, you know, the cream kind of rises to the top, and you can kind of see, you know, where teams are settling and what teams are, you know, considered elite. But right now, we just kind of have this huge, you know, portion of teams that are either elite or just successful right now, and you know, we have a lot of a lot more questions rather than answers right now, it seems.
As fans of the show know, Josh writes a lot of articles that appear in the Washington Post concerning the NFL, and no exception last week, a couple on the Arizona Cardinals, and they gave us one of the most thrilling games you could imagine on Saturday night, beating Green Bay 26-20. It looked as if they were going to lose that. They had the odd coin toss that didn't really flip, and it turned out to be just a terrific game. And you noted in one of your articles that if Larry Fitzgerald plays well, they do well, and if he doesn't have good numbers, they don't do as well. And that was certainly a night when he put up some really strong numbers when it counted.
Oh, sure. I mean, for you know, a 30-plus year old to have a career high 176 yards, you know, is obviously you know, remarkable on its own. But you know, when you consider that he's been kind of given this this responsibility to block more for the running game and for David Johnson, you know, it's just kind of amazing that he's been able to have the kind of success he has this year when they're trying to, you know, move toward more of a balanced offensive set, at least later in the season. I think they recognize, Bruce Arians recognizes that, you know, in order to be successful and effective with the ball offensively in the playoffs, you know, you need to have, you know, a counterpunch. You need to be able to throw something that the defense might not be expecting. And, you know, if you go five wide, we just saw it with the Pittsburgh game this weekend. You know, you can't rely just on one facet and hope to, you know, turn out okay. I mean, that might be fine in college football, but in the pros, you need to have balance. And Fitzgerald has just been incredible all season long. And, you know, you're right. When they got to overtime, you just kind of expected that all of the momentum had swung in favor of Green Bay, and there was no way that, you know, Arizona would be able to you know, rebound from what was a back-breaking last-second touchdown. And, you know, it was their best defensive player who kind of allowed it, too. You know,
right.
Patrick Peterson, rather, had a chance to knock the ball down, and, you know, Jeff Janis was just a little bit too tall. But, you know, you'd expect if any player on the field would make were to, you know, make a defensive play, it would be Peterson. And, you know, sure enough, you know, it ended up being a touchdown. But well, what a terrific game. You know, Fitzgerald ended up having, you know, essentially all of the highlights in overtime, and, you know, Arizona made it out. And we've got Arizona-Carolina, and couldn't be more looking forward to a matchup.
And you wrote an article about Arizona. If they plan on perhaps winning this, they're going to have to contend with Jonathan Stewart, who's been terrific for Carolina. And I don't know which Carolina team will see, first half Carolina or second half Carolina, but I was just stunned to watch how they rolled over Seattle. It was almost doubly stunned to watch them nearly blow that lead. But they're the total package, at least at this point, and Arizona will certainly have him to contend with on the ground.
Oh, sure. And, you know, when you add Cam Newton into the package, you know, that's the most dynamic rushing attack in the NFL, in my opinion. You know, no one has a quarterback like Newton with the athleticism, with the speed, with the power. You know, they're starting to dial up more, you know, quarterback runs for him out of shotgun sets. And obviously that's been, you know, proven to be effective with his numbers on the ground. The Panthers are leading the NFL, at least among postseason teams, in yards per game. They had 144 yards on the ground against Seattle. You know, that's been a big issue for Arizona later in the season too. You know, two of, I think, the last three games they've allowed over 100 yards on the ground. Two of them were to Green Bay, granted, but you know, they're going to have their hands full with Carolina. Carolina's not going to make it easy for them. And when you look at that Carolina passing attack, it's almost even more spectacular what Newton's been able to do, considering, you know, who he's throwing to. I mean, Greg Olsen is a terrific talent, but, you know, Kelvin Benjamin, I think everyone forgot that he was the number one receiver heading into the season, and, you know, now you're kind of replacing him with, you know, some auxiliary receivers who are looking to earn contracts down the road, not really proven talents certainly no Pro Bowl, talents there. And Newton's still been successful. So, if any team has balance in the NFL right now, it's Carolina. And, Arizona certainly has their hands full if they're looking to get to the Super Bowl.
3 weeks ago, I wouldn't have given much of a chance to the Patriots at repeating with all the injuries they had. Just really didn't see it happen. I really believed that their road would end with the Kansas City Chiefs, but it didn't. Another article you wrote about Gronk, when he's healthy, they are a different team. He had a big game, he had a couple of touchdown passes, touchdown grabs, seven catches. And then even though no touchdowns, Julian Edelman with 10 catches, a guy that I thought might not see the field again, is making a big impact. And suddenly you got to think about the Patriots. They're everything I've seen say they're favored to go to Denver, win, and get to the Super Bowl.
Oh, sure. I think people can run these hypotheticals about, whether or not if Andy Reid could control the clock, maybe Kansas City would have had a shot to win that game, which obviously got a lot closer than I think New England was expecting. But that offense is just absurd. I mean, when Gronkowski has two touchdowns in a game, which has happened 16 times, the Patriots are 15-1. And obviously that happened this weekend. It seems like it would take him getting hit by a freight train to keep him out of a game, because he's just, he's out there with his bionic arm, and he's still, faster than some of the cornerbacks and stronger than everybody. And when you add Edelman into the fold, like you said, that gives them a slot option. That gives them, someone quick to throw it to. Edelman really made his presence known, and he obviously looked rusty. He dropped a couple of balls, but that offense looks as formidable as any Patriots offense. Again, they don't have a rushing attack, so I think Denver knows what it's dealing with, and obviously has some Pro Bowl players on that defensive side of the ball. So it should be it'll be a low scoring matchup. I think when you look at what Denver's offense looks like heading into the game, they looked like they were suffocating out there, mm-hmm. Frankly, against Pittsburgh, just doing whatever they could to get points. And, Sunday could come down to a battle of field goals between Gostkowski and McManus, who are, arguably the two best, kickers in the game. Because right now it doesn't seem like Denver is going to be able to keep up with New England if they start riding the Gronkowski and the Edelman train, and if Brady starts getting consistent there in the pocket, because it doesn't look like Denver is going to have enough firepower there to keep up. But it should be a defensive battle. Everyone knows how good Denver's defense has been all season long, and they'll have a chance to prove it this Sunday.
Manning versus Brady, that gets a lot of ink, but Manning, to me, Sunday, he looked more like just your game management quarterback. 21 of 37, he had the yardage, but no touchdown passes, wasn't intercepted, did an okay job, but just not the spectacular quarterback that we've seen in years gone by.
Oh, sure. And when you talk about Manning, you think about these these deep post routes that he would throw to Reggie Wayne and players like that, these perfectly thrown balls, these balls that you would see in tutorial videos of, this is how to throw the perfect deep pass.
Sure.
And he, it looked like he was really struggling to get it 10 yards downfield. And, it doesn't matter if you've got, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas streaking down the field. It looks like if they're not within 15 yards, he's going to, have a little bit more wobble on those throws than is kind of expected of him. And that's just, it comes with old age. I was really impressed, like you said, with his ability to, take care of the ball, because really a lot of playoff games just kind of come down to that. Mm-hmm. We saw that was the case with Seattle. The first half, Russell Wilson couldn't catch a break with his offensive line. But, if some of those balls aren't intercepted, especially the pick six, who knows? Maybe Seattle, comes out with that win. And, Manning didn't fumble. He didn't, throw any picks. He only was sacked once, so he was able to get the ball out when he needed to. And, even if his stat line looks, a little bit more raw than usual, 22 of 37, no touchdowns, it's not really a great line. But, for him, everyone was talking about, you know, how could you amass this many interceptions despite only playing this many games?
Right.
And they were right to have that conversation because obviously that really crippled Denver's chances. But, you know, if he can control the line of scrimmage and they can just kind of win the battle for field position, you know, who's to say that McManus can't kick him to a win?
So who will we see in Super Bowl 50?
You know, I really think it's going to be Denver, and I think it's going to be Carolina. And the reason being, I just think that Brady seems to be clicking right now. We saw a little bit of holes, or a few holes rather, in Denver's defense. I mean, how could you let Ben Roethlisberger throw for 300 yards
right.
without his his top receiver, and with, you know, a shredded arm? I think that was just you know, kind of a glaring sign that maybe things aren't totally 100% elite on the defensive side of the ball right now for Denver. So I think Brady's going to be able to dice them up at least on enough drives for them to get, you know, the points they need. And I just think Carolina right now is riding this wave of, you know, having the best quarterback in football, and that running attack I really think is going to prove to be the difference, because, you know, Arizona. You know, if you can't keep Eddie Lacy in check, you're not going to be able to keep Jonathan Stewart in check, and have absolutely no shot to keep Cam Newton in check, especially when he, you know, finds those holes downfield. So I look for it to be Carolina and Denver, and, you know, that would be some Super Bowl if we got it.
It certainly would be. We'll check your work next Tuesday, Josh. I appreciate the visit, and, of course, links to all of Josh's articles from the past week will appear with this podcast. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Josh, and we'll chat with you next week, all right?
All right. Thanks, Neil.
That is Josh Planos. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, will talk Racers in high school hoops. That's on Tuesday's Neil Bradley Show at 1340WNBS.com.